blog called the Acton Blog. There was a post in July of 2018 by Joseph Sund, and he says that Americans love to say things like, follow your passion or pursue your dreams. They also like to say things like, do what you love and love what you do. But do these statements represent a path to vocational clarity, personal fulfillment, and human flourishing? There's been a study, a recent study done by Stanford University and National University of Singapore, Yale College, that tells us following your dreams or your passions is likely to lead to over-limited results, inflated expectations about career, about finances, and also early or eventual burnout. The study's authors concluded that people are often told to find your passion, to pursue their passion, as though this passion is somehow an objective reality out there that's waiting to be discovered by us. But there's a downside. There's a hidden motivational downside. Urging people to find their passions may lead them to put all of their eggs in one basket, and then at some point in the future when it becomes really, really difficult to carry that basket, it's dropped. And so our culture tells us to look within. Assuming that there is a fixed set of passions to guide us on our way. But researchers have found that it is more positive in people to look for interests and knowledge and then to develop those interests and knowledge over time. And so the study encourages us to not look inward, but to look outward, to look outward. This is what David Brooks has written concerning this whole idea. He's a conservative thinker and cultural and political commentator. And this is a really great quote. Hear this. Most young people don't look inside and then plan a life. They look outside and find a need or God's call. And this last phrase is powerful, which summons their life. And so this whole study that I've been talking about here basically says that it is better to say develop your passion than to find your passion. But as we do, let's remember that we need to hear the voice of God. Considering the needs of our neighbors, those people who are around us, and then aligning our hearts and our hands accordingly. And this morning's message is going to assist us in doing that. We are in the second week of our series that is called A Work in Progress. And oh boy, I bet you that all of us feel like, especially certain weeks, that our lives are not only a work in progress, we're not even sure that progress is being made in our lives. And it's not unique to any of us. That's just a part of the reality of the human condition in which we live. And there are Bible greats who feel that way as well. And we've looked at one last week. We're going to continue to look at his life this week. It's Moses. He felt like that as well. And it can be true for us. And so we're going to continue to drill down into Moses' life to discover how he overcame a whole bunch of obstacles and how God used him in order to achieve God's purposes. Moses looked outward. He did not look inward. Our passage this morning is the entire chapter 3 of Exodus. If you're using a Pew Bible, you can see where you can find it, page 90 and page 41. I'm going to access it out of my all-too-small smartphone. But it is always our desire and it is our privilege to stand in the presence of God as we read this passage. So would you please stand and follow along as I do just that. So this is what we read in Exodus chapter 3. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within the bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, well, I'll go over there and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. And when the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. And then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And at this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt, and I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the land of the Egyptians and to bring them up and out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God in this mountain. And Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they asked me, what is his name? What then shall I tell them? And God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent you. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. And this is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. Go assemble the elders of Israel and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, appeared to me and said, I have watched over you and have seen what has been done to you in Egypt, and I have promised to bring you up out of your misery in Egypt into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. The elders of Israel will listen to you, and then you and the elders are to go to the king of Egypt and say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. Let us take a three-day journey into the wilderness to offer sacrifices to the Lord your God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless a mighty hand compels him. So I will stretch out my hand, and I will strike the Egyptians with all wonders that I will perform among them. And after that, he will let you go. And I will make the Egyptians favorably disposed toward this people, so that when you leave, you will not go empty-handed. Every woman is to ask her neighbor and any woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold and for clothing, which you will put on your sons and daughters. And so you will plunder the Egyptians. O Lord, you clearly desire us to look outward and not inward. As we seek to discover your purpose for our lives, open our hearts and our minds to see this clearly this day. Amen. Thank you. Please be seated. Just a recap. Moses is in the land of Midian. He's been there a very long time. And God has been preparing his heart, and the moment has arrived that God is going to call him to his purposes. So, how does this occasion happen? Moses takes his father-in-law Jethro's flock of sheep, and he goes to the other side of the wilderness where there is a really lush and great land for pasturing. And he comes to Mount Horeb, which actually is better described as the mountains of Horeb, and that's where Mount Sinai is, where Moses meets God, likely a part of that range. And it is there that the angel of the Lord appears to Moses in this bush that is burning. What does that represent? What's the fire in the bush represent? There's a couple of theories. It could represent that God is light, so the fire represents the light of God. It could represent the oppression of the Israelites in Egypt. They are suffering under a burning fire. It could also be a symbol of God purifying his people through the difficulties that they are experiencing in Egypt. Do you think that if you saw a bush burning and not being consumed, that you would be curious about that? I would be. And so he approaches, Moses approaches, the voice of God addresses him from the bush, instructing him to remove his shoes because the ground is holy. What does that mean? Does it mean that the ground is somehow inherently holy? No, it means that the ground is holy because that's where God is. God is present. So God then identifies himself as the God of Moses' forefathers. Remember? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And upon hearing this, Moses hides his face. So he goes from curiosity and hears God's voice into fear and trembling. He feels like he's unworthy to stand before God, and he covers up his face. God now reveals his purposes in communicating with Moses. The Israelites are under tremendous suffering in Egypt. God has heard their cries to him, and now it is time to do something about that. To lead them out of this land of oppression to a beautiful, lush land, a land that is filled with, milk and honey, flowing with milk and honey, a place that can sustain the Israelites for their living purposes. And then he tells Moses that through him, he will accomplish his purpose. And Moses is like, me? Are you talking about me? So he goes from being curious to being fearful, and now he's incredulous. Little old me, are you kidding? I am not worthy. But Moses has learned the lessons God wanted to teach him while in Midian all of these years. And Moses is right. He's not worthy by himself. He's not worthy by himself, but God is going to be with him. Now, I think that this whole time of preparation was really powerful in Midian, because if God had approached Moses earlier in his life, he was brash, he was a leader, and he probably would have said, no sweat, God, I've got this, leave it to me, I'll take care of it. But Moses expresses healthy reluctance and humility. And so God reassures Moses that he won't be alone in this huge undertaking. God will be with him. And when the task has been completed, this will be the sign that it really is God who has called you to do this. And then Moses will worship God on that very mountain. Now Moses continues with the self-doubt, asking God, okay, I'm going to go to the people of Israel. I think he's trying to get out of it, actually. Who am I to tell them has sent me? And God says, I am. Wow, I am. There is so much in that. By the way, it's another way of saying, I will be with you. There's a whole lot communicated in this. It communicates that God was, is, and always will be. And Jesus said to his interrogators the week he was arrested who he was, and he said, I am. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what the Jewish religious leaders, they knew that that was saying, I am God in the flesh. And so they went ballistic over that, and it got him into trouble. But then God tells Moses to let the Israelites know that I am has sent him. So God now gives a strategy. He doesn't just leave Moses to his own devices, and the strategy is this. He tells Moses to go directly to the Israelite elder leadership, telling him, the elders will listen to you. And these guys were wise individuals. They were the ones who, through age and life experience, are the decision makers on behalf of the people. And then Moses says, you with those elders go to Pharaoh and ask him this first question. Let me and my people go out into the wilderness for 3 days and sacrifice. Now it's interesting. Did you notice that God says, but he's going to say no. So why would God ask Moses to ask Pharaoh that? Well, it could very well be that he was priming the pump later, so that Moses already or that Pharaoh already has this idea in his head. So when Moses comes back to him and says, "Pharaoh, let my people go," after a whole bunch of plagues have already happened, Pharaoh is inclined to say yes. And that is exactly what occurs. And so God assures Moses that the Israelites will not leave Egypt empty-handed. He will incline the Egyptians to give them gold and silver and clothing. And you think to yourself, well, how did that occur? If you're an Egyptian and there's been all of these plagues, including the angel of death coming through, you're sick of all of this. You're tired of it. So the mentality may have been, get out of here, go, and we want you gone so bad. Here, take this. And that's what appears to have occurred as well. And did you notice the word plunder? Now, this wasn't a military victory, but it was a victory by God through these plagues to conquer Pharaoh. And certainly God did that through these plagues. And so our passage communicates that despite feeling that we may not have any clear direction in our life, he has a call for each and every one of us. He's got a call for Wilma. He's got a call for Tony. He's got a call for Fran. He's got a call for each and every one of us. So Moses is exiled in Midian. His life is simple. It's uncomplicated. He's tending the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro. He's raising a family. He probably thinks that this is how he's going to live out his years. And yet during these intervening long years, God was working behind the scenes. He was working in Moses' heart and mind. Moses may not have been aware of it. He was working in the Israelites as well back in Egypt. And he was bringing the two together for this incredible undertaking with the confirmation that Moses is going to lead this through the burning bush. His plan is revealed. I'm going to ask some difficult questions here that I think the passage begs. So please receive them with the intent in which I am offering them. So what about each of us? Are we wondering what God has next for us? Maybe this question that God has a call for our lives, maybe it hasn't even occurred to us. Maybe we haven't even felt the need to ask this question because life is really good right now for many of us. It's adventuresome. The whole world is unfolding before us. Maybe that's where we're at. And the activities and things that fill our time may even, well, they may be even good and perfectly fine. However, is there synergy in our daily lives pointing us toward a purpose that has eternal significance, that is God-honoring, and is kingdom-building? Or are our daily schedules reflective only of busyness, expediency, personal, rewarding activities? If we answer yes to the latter question, this likely does not constitute God's will or call for our lives. It doesn't. The previous questions are very difficult, and I'm going to ask one more. And I am asking it as a pastor who asks these questions of himself as well and who loves all of us. And this next question is difficult. So buckle up. Is Jesus and the church only getting our leftovers? Is it? And if so, maybe it's time to surrender the good, what is now, for the better, exploring with fresh eyes of faith what God has for us. So have I got your attention? If so, where do we go with this, and what does it look like? What does it look like? First, listen for God's voice. Now, Moses heard God's voice through a burning bush. It was tangible, it was objective, it was real. God can still work like that today. He's powerful. He hasn't changed. But he also speaks to us through Scripture, through prayer, and through the voice of others. And this has been my experience. Let me share my journey and call from God with you. I became a follower of Jesus the summer between my junior year of high school and my senior year of high school. At that point, God wasn't a part of my plan for the future. Here was my plan. I'm going to go to college. I'm going to get a bachelor's degree in business. And then I'm going to take the world by storm and have enough money to retire by the age of 40. How foolish was that, huh? God had other plans. While in college, my youth pastor, his name is Dan Smythe. Does that name ring a bell to you? We support Dan Smythe as a missionary for our church with Global Training Network. So the connection way back here is now here. So Dan Smythe, my youth pastor, way back then, I was a volunteer for him and an intern for him the summer between my junior and senior year of college, just now college. And then that summer, he asked me to meet with him in his office. I didn't know what it was going to be about. So I went, and we sat and did some small chat. And then he unleashed the topic. And he said, "Tony, I believe that God is calling you to full-time occupational ministry." I can't remember if I had to pick my chin up off the ground. I don't know if that happened, but when he said that, I was smiling and saying, this is interesting. Not going to happen. I didn't say that. I was thinking that. Not going to happen. Pastors lead very boring, uneventful lives. Oh boy, did I get that one wrong. I said, this is crazy. There's no way that this is going to happen. So I don't know if he read in my body language what I was thinking inside, I don't know, but he was a very mature and wise person, spiritual person, and he said, "Tony, I just want you to pray about it. I just want you to pray about it. Don't give me an answer now, but we'll talk maybe in a couple weeks." And I told him I would, but again, I was thinking, no picking way this is going to happen. And so with some integrity, I did pray about it. And a number of days after that, I don't know how long the time between him asking me about that and when I actually made the decision, I don't know how long it was, but I remember clear as day looking out the front window of my parents' house in Huntington Beach. And it was at that point that I saw a burning bush and an audible voice of God. No, I'm just kidding. No, that didn't happen. I did not hear an audible voice, but God was speaking to me as clear as if he was. There was an powerful, strong, internal impression that told me, this is what I want you to do with your life, Tony. Powerful. And so I informed Dan. I changed my college major from business to religion, and then I went immediately to seminary right after college. Whew, that was a risk. Because what do you do if you don't decide to do that with a degree in religion from a university? Doesn't make very much money. So it was a step of faith. But the rest is history. And so we're to listen for God's voice. We're to listen for God's voice. And then secondly, we have to have courage. We have to have humility. When God called Moses to be the deliverer of his people from Egypt, Moses didn't appear to be very confident, did he? The irony is that this is precisely the place where he wanted Moses, and it's where he wants us as well. So he can use us more effectively. God doesn't want overconfidence. Instead, we courageously realize that we need God's power to help him in what he has called us to do for his purposes. I can't do anything without God. With eternal consequence, I can't do anything without his help. But there's a Bible verse. It's a great verse. It's Philippians 4:13. You probably know it, and say it with me if you do. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So we need to listen to God's voice. We need to have courage, and we need to have humility. And finally, we need to remember God will be with us. And this is what God told Moses. He also told Moses that once the people were out of Egypt, he, Moses, would know what it was, that it was God who had sent him. And this doesn't sound very reassuring at first, does it? Oh, okay, you're telling me something that's going to happen out in the future? How is that supposed to be a guarantee? But it was intended to be a guarantee. It was intended to be signed, sealed, and delivered as if it had already happened, a done deal. And I think we can see Moses' confidence in God growing. After all, he had a bush in front of him that wasn't being consumed by fire. A voice came out of the bush telling him these things. He's thinking, this is extraordinary, this is supernatural, maybe this is the real deal. And so you can feel his confidence building. And then as the plagues later on unfolded and he saw the mighty hand of God, he was confident that God was with him and was going to make this happen for him. And so whatever it is to which God has called us, we can know that he will be with us. He will be with us. Joshua 1:9, very, very powerful verse. It says, "Have I not commanded you?" That's God speaking. "Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged." Why? "Because the Lord your God will be with you." Does that sound familiar? Isn't that what God told Moses? "The Lord your God will be with you." So, just like my youth pastor said to me so many years ago, "I think God is calling you to occupational ministry," I am going to ask you a question in a similar vein. To what might God be? Oh, someone, God's calling us right now. There he is up on the screen. That startled me. Great picture there, Greg. Thank you. I thought that was actually someone calling. Okay, I'm startled. So to what might God be calling me? As you ask this question, and I'm asking you to ask this question of yourselves this week and in the weeks to come, seek God. And how do we seek God? Well, he may speak to you audibly. He's capable of doing that. But seek God through prayer, through scripture reading, and through the voices of others. People who are spiritually mature Christians, who may have already spoken clarifying words to you in recent days. God may already be working. He is already working, of course. And so I'm not asking you to say, "Okay, I think God's calling me out of what I'm doing. I'm going to go into occupational ministry." Probably not. He may do that, but more likely he's asking all of us to look specifically at our current situation and ask this question, succinctly ask this question: to what is God calling me within the context of my life through the ministry of First Presbyterian Church so that I can achieve his purposes? And in so doing, it's not all about discovering our passion. It's about looking outward and upward, looking outward and upward. Please pray with me. Oh, Lord, these are oh, wow, they're profound thoughts and words. It's a beautiful passage that I think, first of all, challenges us, as it did Moses with the questions God asked of him, but it also is encouraging to us because you do have plans to prosper us and to not harm us, plans to give us hope in the future. And so help us to partner with you in discovering, just gathering information, what that is. It's not about us, it's about you, to look outward for this objective reality. Thank you, Lord. We love you.